And welcome back to this edition of YCSO Behind the Badge. I'm Deputy Trent Ferris, Public Information Officer for the York County Sheriff's Office. Please don't miss out on any future episodes, whether we have them or not. You can do that by following us on our social media pages. We're on all the big ones. You know them, including the Threads app. We're going to start doing more on Threads this week if you're a fan of Threads versus X, formerly known as Twitter. We're starting to do more things on Threads just so we can keep everybody up to date. But also, we're wanting folks to stay up to date with you, us, through your phone, email, text. So we're asking you to go to our website, yorkcountysheriff.com, and sign up for Notify Me alerts. We're going to send you news releases and alerts. If you were on the alerts list and around the York area last weekend or a couple weekends ago, we sent an alert out to your phone about a closure on Alexander Love Highway. Not going to get into that, but that's what we did. We told you, hey, Alexander Love Highway on Sunday morning can get, you know, pretty congested. So we let everybody know about that. So we do all this so we effectively get you the right information at the exactly right time so you can make right and informed decisions about your personal safety. All right, folks, you've asked for it. You wanted it. We're going to give it to you. Cold cases. That's what seems to be the hot ticket item on our podcasting. And when we get a boost in people listening as our cold case episodes, and we're gonna talk about a couple of cold cases. And our next guest, she's been here before. We talked about baby Angel Hope, the case that she helped solve after being cold for 30-something odd years. Detective Linnell Day, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, Trent.
glad you're here. And we're not going to go into all the other stuff that we usually do on podcasts, but we're just going to talk cold cases today. Yeah. And the first one, is one that I've always known about. back when I first started, we were putting up different things like wanted people and some of the cold cases that we had that were on the old playing cards.
Yes.
Do you remember those? They were like a playing card. Like they went off the old the Iraqi war. Hey, they were looking for the top wanted people in Iraq.
Yes.
And so they put like Saddam Hussein on a playing card. He was like the ace of hearts or something like that. And so I took all those that were on those playing cards, and this was one of them. Charles Wells, and I guess Charlie is what he went by. And I'll just tell everybody real quick. And if we've talked about it before, well, you've probably seen it on our social media pages. The short version of this was on Wednesday, December 21st, 1966, about midnight. Mr. Charlie Wells and Mr. Johnny Chapman were closing up the grill right there near North Carolina state line on highway. It says Route 161, but I guess
that's what it was back then.
You know, rural routes.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I could go to my grandma out in Catawba named all the rural routes their road names because everything was a route back then. They didn't have road names. Like she named Old Simpson Place because she was the postmaster in Catawba. Mm-hmm. She named Old Simpson Place Old Simpson Place because my grandfather had a garden on whatever the road was. Then he would always tell her, I'm going out to the Old Simpson Place, which was we were related to the Simpsons somehow. And he had a garden out there, and that's how we told him, I'm going out to the old Simpson Place. And that's why Old Simpson Place is named Old Simpson Place. I digress. But Highway 161, which is then Route 61, was just south of the state line in just south of Kings Mountain in York County. So they locked up the grill that night, and during that, somebody approached them with a gun, at least one person, right?
Yes, sir.
And I'll let you take it from there.
Okay, so Mr. Charlie Wells was shot first. He fell to the ground near the car that they had parked about 10 feet from the front door. Mr. Johnny Chapman was on the other side, and he tried to make his way around to Charlie.
Mm.
Charlie still had the keys to the grill and the car.
Hmm.
So as Johnny tried to make his way around the front of the car, he was shot and he fell to the ground himself. Johnny's injuries were less critical than Charlie's were. And Johnny managed to get the keys and to put them in the door of the grill and set the alarm off, and that attracted the attention of neighbors who live close by.
So it's weird, 1966. I mean, you would think, I mean, I guess alarm systems were still,
they existed,
but
probably
rare.
Not common.
Yeah, it seems rare to me that they would have an alarm system.
Yeah.
So the alarm goes off. I'm sure back then it wasn't a silent alarm. It was pretty loud.
Probably loud, I would imagine.
Let the neighbors know what was going on.
Yeah, so the neighbors, they arrive on scene, and they get medical attention for Charlie and for Johnny. They're taken to nearby hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
It's believed that it was a robbery attempt, and Charlie had just placed that evening's earnings in the lockbox into the vehicle mm-hmm. whenever the shooting occurred.
And I was told one time the earnings were only like a couple of bucks, like $80 or something like that. Very minor amount.
Total, yeah.
Compared to today.
It was a very small amount. I think total they had less than $150 on the whole property.
On the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, but back then in 1966, that's quite a bit of money. Today it's like, $150? What?
Yeah.
People get robbed all the time for $150.
Yeah.
So anyway, go ahead.
So... you know, that's sort of the gist of what happened there. The investigation occurred, and they weren't able to develop a suspect based off of the investigation. They interviewed a lot of different people,
mm-hmm.
but no clear suspect to go to court with. But one of the things that I found the most interesting about this case, when we talk about these old cases, everybody always asks me, what's the oldest case in the file?
Mm-hmm.
So this is it. This is the oldest case in the file. It's December the 21st, 1966.
That's a while back.
And one thing that was just really caught my attention with it was how differently we investigated these cases back in the 60s mm-hmm. compared to how we would investigate it now. This was decades before agencies started having their own forensic units. Mm-hmm. It's... decades before agencies had their own labs. You know, we just recently, less than 10 years ago, got a DNA lab.
Right.
This is really before DNA, useful DNA.
Mm-hmm. I think probably the only thing they had then was just like, hey, we know how to, dust for fingerprints.
Right, and, Well, SLED, for example, SLED had only been approved by the state of South Carolina in 1935.
Okay.
So SLED was only 25 years old when this happened,
Wow. Basically.
And at that time, SLED's main objective was enforcing South Carolina's liquor laws and helping out with local cases occasionally.
And if anybody doesn't know, back then it was liquor laws. We even have a picture of old Sheriff Bryant when he was new to the job, back when he was Deputy Bryant, and he was busting up a liquor steal.
Right.
Liquor, just to give folks context, you would always think of that as back in the Prohibition days, liquor laws.
You know,
it's like, oh, well, whatever. So, no, you couldn't make your own shine.
No, back in 1935,
you're dealing with steals. Yeah, that's right, baby. So every creek in York County probably had a liquor steal somewhere
probably.
On it. So, yeah. So it's a fairly recent occurrence or phenomenon.
Yeah.
So,
I go to the file room. I pull out this huge plastic tub that has all of the homicide investigation in it. About 5 pages into that tub, I found a letter from the desk of J. Edgar Hoover.
No way.
Yeah. So our sheriff then, Grover Noe, he had reached out to J. Edgar Hoover personally for assistance.
Like on the case. Head of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover.
Yes, sir. There's a letter written to J. Edgar Hoover saying, I've got this case and we could use some help.
Wow.
So for those of you that don't know who J. Edgar Hoover was, he was the last director of the Bureau of Investigation beginning in 1924.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the first director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, beginning mm-hmm. in 1935. And he held that position until his death, which I believe was 1972.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. J. Edgar's FBI was credited with creating a centralized fingerprint file and expanding the use of forensic science in criminal investigations.
Man, this was only a couple of years ago, you would think. Now it's just like,
yeah.
We have our own stuff now, but
Right. And a lot of that, just kind of as a side note, began with the Lindbergh baby investigation.
Yes.
You know, I history mean, that's lesson, going way folks. Back into history.
Yeah, but still.
And for all you bookworms out there listening, Hoover was also credited with modifying the way that the government agencies filed evidence and filed their cases and everything by using the Dewey Decimal System that he had learned at the Library of Congress when he was 18 years old working his first job.
Do they still use the Dewey Decimal System? Do they still teach kids that?
I don't know.
I'm curious. Now I'm going to have to go find a librarian.
I said it to a 14-year-old just 2 days ago, and he looked at me like he had no clue.
I mean, that's what we, when we would go to the library in elementary school, they would have an entire class on how to see what, you're looking for a book.
That's
you go
right.
to the card file, look yep. it up, you see the decimal, whatever the number was with the Dewey Decimal System, and then that's how you go find your book.
That's right.
Because there are so many books in the library.
But in the 1930s, that revolutionized the way that the federal agencies were storing their evidence and storing their paperwork.
So not only just library books, it was also used in the federal
yes.
FBI.
Basically, it was a modified version, but similar.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So unfortunately, even with the assistance of the FBI in 1966, there just wasn't enough evidence to close this case at that time.
And it's... We always talk about cold cases. Cold is just because things have, like you just said, there wasn't anything else we could do.
That's right.
But it was never a closed case.
It was never a closed case, given the technology that we had available then, and even with the best technology that was available then.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough in 1966.
And you would think, I mean, we talked about it, that restaurant had an alarm system.
It did.
And it probably was a very loud, blaring noise that woke up all the neighbors. But the neighbors were actually the now modern-day surveillance cameras.
Yes.
Because nowadays, most, if not any business around that you know of, take for Walmart or any kind of restaurant. Mm-hmm. I was working at a restaurant this weekend doing a overtime assignment. I walked into their office like, man, you have got a pretty decent camera system in here. There ain't
right.
a place covered in this place without, you know, a camera seeing it.
Yeah.
And so back then, that was not a thing. They barely had television sets that are could
That's
get in
right.
a pretty decent signal.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Anybody that's familiar with that area of 161-2 knows that the oldest houses in that area kind of sit off the roadway. So, mm-hmm. you know, they might not have had a clear view, no video surveillance. And it's sort of by itself up there. There wasn't a lot of other businesses around because you're snuggled up to Kings Mountain National and State Park.
Yeah, I was going to say the state park's up that way. So it's nothing but a mountain. And a park.
And a few houses.
I mean, there's a bit. Was it closer to the state line, or was it like down where the Bear's Den is, like across the road from the state park? Or is it
my understanding is it's between that intersection and the state line.
Okay. So
it's
like,
isn't far.
Yeah, I mean, it's like about not even a mile,
no.
probably.
Yeah.
So no cameras, just a couple of reports of an alarm going off. Of course, two victims. Charlie passed away. Did Johnny give any information or whatever?
Johnny did apparently recover from his injuries. I can't tell you what his physical condition was afterwards, but because it was pretty significant injury.
Back then, too. I mean,
yes.
If I remember correctly, they said it was a shotgun. It wasn't like a pistol or something.
So yes, Johnny's was shotgun.
A shotgun blast can do a lot more damage than one bullet hole. I'm
correct.
Just saying. So it's 1966. I mean, what else do you think? This is just going to stay cold, or is it just you're waiting on? I mean, because people who were living back then are probably not in the best of health, I guess. I mean, old enough to know. I mean, kids born in 1966 probably wouldn't know.
Probably not. I mean, you're looking at 57 years, something like that.
Yeah.
My math's probably not
mathing
this early in the morning.
I thought about getting the calculator out.
But more than 50 years. So, you know, you may have a few folks living who remember the event as adults.
Yeah.
You may have the children of these people who've been told stories over the years, mm-hmm. or maybe who have some knowledge of a grandpa who says, "Hey, back in 1966, I did this thing."
Yeah.
And that's what
I feel real bad about it.
Yeah, I feel real bad about it. I'm on my deathbed, and I want to tell somebody I feel real bad I did this thing.
Yeah.
But we'd be interested. If you have any knowledge about this case, we certainly would like to hear from you.
And I know it's still a common theme here today. The state line, these people probably went back towards Gastonia, towards North Carolina.
They very well may have, yeah. You know, because it's so close to the state line. But, you know, at this time, I can't tell you who those people were.
Right. And it's like second verse, same as the first. It's like, you know, we have all this crime up and down the, you know, Carowinds Boulevard close to the state line. There's things over in the Clover Lake Wylie area where people from Gaston County will come down and shoplift from the Walmart and go back into North Carolina.
That's right.
I mean, it's something, what people, you know, say, "Oh, this crime coming down from North Carolina." Ain't nothing new, folks.
No, it's not new, but I can assure you the York County Sheriff's Office, if you go back across that state line, we're going to get the correct paperwork to come get you.
Yeah, we've got pretty decent partnerships nowadays.
That's right.
With our local agencies across the state line, though we may be in different states and different jurisdictions and different all that, but we have things called governor warrants. If you don't want to come back down, if you want to waive some extradition, you know, or whatever, all the extradition stuff. But all right, so let's go on to the next one here. This one's more recent, and I'm going to do my math on this one. This is closer to the 16 years. I mean, this is 16 years, not too far down the road.
No.
This one's something you could probably get some folks' help on.
I hope so.
So, Daryl Vanderpool.
Yes, sir.
So, let's give everybody an update of what happened in this case.
Okay. So, on Monday, August 4th, 2008, mm-hmm. deputies were called to Chatelaine in Rock Hill, South Carolina, in reference to a suspicious vehicle.
Which happens all the time.
Yep. Deputies arrived on scene. They met with the tenants of that residence, who advised that they had returned home and found a car parked in their driveway that they didn't recognize. Hmm. The keys were in the ignition and the radio was playing, but nobody was around it.
Hmm. It's odd. I mean, hey, come home. Car that's there is not yours.
Absolutely.
Everything's running. You're like, first thing I'm thinking is like, it's like, who's at my house?
Yes.
Well, what's going on? Whoa.
And they did too.
Yeah.
You know, but they got a little bit distracted because when they got there, there were newer tenants. There was some furniture delivery people that had showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started focusing on the furniture delivery people. They kind of just looked, made sure, you know, the inside of the house, there wasn't anybody in there. And then they dealt with the furniture people.
Mm-hmm.
And once the furniture people left, they said, let's call about this car now. So they called the sheriff's office, and they waited outside until the deputies arrived.
Because you would have figured, like, okay, somebody's left their car here with the keys in it. They're going to be back.
Right. They can't be far. It's
maybe they left, something fell off their car, and they're going to look for it, and they're going to come back or something like that. I mean, anything could have happened. But
or maybe next door.
Yeah, a normal person would probably be able to do the same thing. Like, oh, they'll be back.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So when the deputies arrived on scene, they talked to the couple for a few minutes, figured out what they had seen, hadn't found anybody. So the deputies, they started searching the area. They actually went to the backside of the residence, and there's a porch set of steps on the backside of the residence. Mm-hmm. They found 23-year-old Daryl Vanderpool deceased on the back steps of that residence from a gunshot wound.
And this is happening like all while there's a furniture people delivering
on the front side. Right.
And nobody thought about going around back because they're going through the front door to deliver furniture, and the people who are moving in are like, okay, let's deal with the furniture people on the front side of the house.
Right.
Nobody went around, which a typical person.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've got folks at your house, you're distracted.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to go out in the backyard after I get home, it's going to be after everything's done. Like, I've got to take the dog out or something.
Correct.
You know, that, you don't typically go around your back of your house to go into the front door.
No.
So they find him on the back steps of this house. All right. So that's when we go into police mode, right?
Absolutely.
Like, we found somebody back there.
You've got a crime scene at that point. So they call in investigators and they start canvassing the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But during the initial canvas, they don't come up with a really clear-cut suspect.
Mm.
Nobody saw anybody do something. Nobody knows this person on the steps right at that moment in time.
Anybody hear any gunshots? A gunshot
one. There were a couple of folks that reported that they thought they'd heard a gunshot or thought they'd heard firecrackers.
Right.
Or, you know, you get a lot of that.
August, that's near July. People still firing off.
Oh, sure.
4th of July
this
fireworks.
This is within a month. Yeah. Over the course of the next 2 years, dozens of people are interviewed.
Mm.
And that's across South Carolina, across North Carolina. They traveled and interviewed anybody and everybody that would talk about the case.
Right. People who may, it's like friends of friends, family members, sure. So on and so forth. And, you know, people who may have had issues with Mr. Vanderpool in the past or whatever, good or bad.
Correct.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just dozens.
Dozens. Of people.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, all right. Was there any reason why he would have been at that house? Was he like a former tenant there or?
No, nothing. Nothing that I found in the file really put him with that particular residence.
Anywhere lived nearby or anything
like that? You know, Rock Hill's not a huge place. So, yes, he was a resident of Rock Hill.
Okay.
Grew up in Rock Hill. Probably familiar with most of the little neighborhoods across Rock Hill.
But she had no reason to be at the back steps of this particular house that was empty,
sir.
And getting ready to be, you know, somebody living there. The people who lived there happened to know who he was?
No, sir.
At the time?
They didn't know him.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of just being a person who's, you know, well, hey, getting ready to move into this house, getting some furniture delivered, and, you know, getting excited about a new whatever, new house or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they find a dead body on the back of their steps.
Yes.
So, all right. So it's been 16 years. I mean, what can folks help you with? I mean,
well, today, if Daryl was still alive, he'd be getting ready to celebrate his 39th birthday.
Mm.
It's coming up very soon. You know, if he's only 39, that means that probably many of his friends, his family members, his neighbors,
mm-hmm.
they're all probably still living too, unlike Mr.
Yeah.
Wells' case.
Yep.
This is kind of the polar opposite there.
Right.
And I have to believe that some of those people have some information that hasn't been shared with us yet. Somebody has to know something.
Right, because you've interviewed dozens of people.
Correct.
They've given you what they can.
Yes, sir.
But somebody out there is probably either one, either not saying something, or two, like you said with Mr. Wells, somebody's like, okay, it's been 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is on my chest. I need to get this off.
Absolutely.
Whether they're involved or not, they heard something.
That's right.
It's like sometimes somebody, the guilty conscience will out. The truth will out eventually.
Because, and it normally will.
Yeah.
At some point in a person's life, it normally will, whether it's guilt about what you've done or whether it's a little bit of a alpha personality mm-hmm. that maybe makes threats about what they've done. Maybe they say, hey, I did it to old Vanderpool over there. I'll do it to you, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you've had those sorts of experiences, we'd sure like to talk to you.
And where is Shadow Lane in Rock Hill? I'm not familiar. Well, we'll look it up. Look it up, folks, Shadow Lane in Rock Hill. I don't know where it is either, so don't feel bad. But it is in Rock Hill, in the sheriff's office jurisdiction, so we can narrow that down. But if you live in that area, you know where Shadow Lane is, maybe just check it out. Just like any kind of information can help Linnell and finding out what happened. Because, like she said, Mr. Vanderpool had no reason to be at this house on Shadow Lane in Rock Hill. It is we have calls that go out daily that you can hear something, somebody, hey, we got a call, suspicious person, suspicious vehicle in the area. We get those calls probably 5 to 6, if not more, times a day.
Sure.
So, and that's one of those things where, you know, if it's suspicious to one person, it's going to be suspicious to another, and maybe you've seen something.
That's right.
Does that make sense? Did you find out where Shadow Lane is?
Absolutely. according to the power of the interweb, Shadow Lane is going to be not too far from the intersections of 901 and West Main Street.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's right there. Right, almost in the heart of Rock Hill, like in the south, what do they call it, the new Clinton Connection south portion of Rock Hill, mm-hmm. 901
yep.
Main it Street. It says
if you take Elder Road off of 901, that it'll take you right around the little block there that Shadow Lane will come off of.
So, there you go, folks. If you know anything about this case, it happened then on August 4th, 2008, 16-ish years ago. Daryl Vanderpool would have celebrated his 39th birthday. What would be a better gift than to give closure to his family? I'm sure his family still are looking for answers.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Because nobody really wants to have a loved one die on them and not have a closure to why. The big question, why this happened, who did it. So, there's two ways. If you have any information about these cases, about Charles Wells, that happened on December 21st, 1966, right up there near the state line of Kings Mountain, right near the Kings Mountain State Park area, and or Daryl Vanderpool, that happened on August 4th, 2008, off Shadow Lane, you can do two things. One, you can call Detective Linnell Day here at the York County Sheriff's Office at 803-628-3059, or you can give a call anonymously. Or, well, you can give a call to Crime Stoppers. That number is 1-877-409-4321. They'd rather you not call anymore nowadays. You still can call, but if you really want to remain anonymous, you can do what I did this past week, is finally download the P3 Tips app. And it's right here on my phone. It's the P3. If you go on the Apple Store or whatever Android service that you use, the P3 Tips app, it looks like it's a blue colored app square with a P where the 3 would be where the circle in the middle of the P would be. So it's a P3 Tips app. You click on that, it'll give you ask you some questions like where you're at, where you know, what's your passcode, and it'll get you to the point where you can put this information in if you have any information, and it's completely anonymous. There's no way to trace this who you are, but you will get a number saying, hey, you're the person who gave me this number. And then if your tip leads to an arrest, they'll let you know about it through your app, so we don't know your name or anything, and then you can earn some money through Crime Stoppers of York County. Your boss, Captain Carson Neely, is the person who is over our representative for Crime Stoppers, and he is a big, big proponent of Crime Stoppers because we have solved a number of crimes through Crime Stoppers. So go get the P3 Tips app, and if you don't want to get an app on your phone, you can always go to CrimeStoppersOfYorkCounty.com. That's CrimeStoppersOfYorkCounty.com. And you click on like the logo there, Crime Stoppers, or like submit a tip. It'll send you to the same place, P3 Tips app. Then all our tips go through Midland's Crime Stoppers, which is almost a statewide Crime Stoppers program where everybody can benefit from crime information to help solve cases. So there you go. Two cases, two cold cases. You asked for them, you got them. And Linnell has graciously said that she would come back in the future to talk about some of the cold cases that she's worked on. We'll just have to get some of the good ones that, you know, she might need some help on, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You need some help. I mean,
I'll take all the help I can get.
You know, we have those armchair detectives out there. They like to go out and try to solve them themselves. That's why people, this is what podcast, quote, true crime podcasts are like people love because they hear all these cases on podcasts and say, oh, I can help out with that or something like that. Well, so it's not like you're not good at what you do. It's just you can use a little extra set of eyes, right?
Sure, absolutely. I'm an investigator. I very rarely know my victim. So everything is an investigation.
Right.
From who the person was to who did it.
And then hopefully we'll get the whodunit on this one. So, All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening to this week's Behind the Badge. First, don't forget to go sign up for those Notify Me alerts at YorkCountySheriff.com. And if you need to go to Crime Stoppers, you can find a link to Crime Stoppers through YorkCountySheriff.com. You can sign up for Notify Me alerts and always follow us on our social media pages. We'll have this podcast on our social media pages so you can click on it. And it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, any major podcasting service. So if you want to listen to it, tell your friends about it. And then maybe your friend will have an idea of what happened on some of these cold cases. So, all right, folks, thanks for listening to this week's edition of YCSO Behind the Badge.